Engaging conversation on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
To Just Ask Janet. Well, have you ever thought about pro-life spirituality? Is there such a thing? I think there is. Well, in today's program, we're going to be talking about the spirituality of the missionaries of the Gospel of Life. But we're also going to be talking to a very dear friend of mine and Father Frank Pavones, who actually made the journey with us in starting up that pro-life spirituality. He came to us as a person aspiring what he thought to the priesthood. And of course, the journey continues. And welcoming to the program now is a dear friend of mine and Father Frank Pavones, Father David Begody. Father, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Janet. It's good to be with you today and your viewers, and be happy to share my experiences with the missionaries of the Gospel of Life, its founding, spirituality, with you and your guest today.
That's wonderful. Well, of course, Father, I forget, but and you're probably better with the year than I am. I think it was, what, 2000 and like...
2006 is when I joined. The community, right. the community began in 2005. Right. And so I joined in 2006 and uprooted myself from Pennsylvania and moved to all places, Amarillo, Texas.
I remember that well. Yeah. And at that time, it was Bishop John Yonta,
yes,
who said, well, yes, let's have a pro-life priesthood, a seminary and all that. Right. So I know you and several other men came that very beginnings, and you had pretty good training. Didn't Father Pavone and myself and the other pro-life leaders we brought in for training, it was pretty good pro-life training, wasn't it?
Yeah, so our experience was kind of atypical, I would say, compared to other religious orders. Many religious orders have what's called the novitiate, which is almost semi-monastic, but ours was called the Year of Inquiry, in which we did develop our spirituality, but at the same time, we went ahead and traveled and learned so much about the pro-life movement, its various aspects, and that is one of the things that I still carry with me in my priesthood today. Of course, I'm a Josephite priest, but I carry that training with me today and use it to help men and women as best I can.
Yeah, I know. And of course, that happened for a couple of years. And then, of course, Rome said, well, you can't found the seminary right now. They
right.
kind of, because everything has to be with permission, as we know.
Yes.
But they did let us continue the missionaries of Gospel Life as a lay apostolate, that people active in the pro-life movement could do that. And we're going to come back to that whole thing shortly, because I think people want to know, oh, how could I get involved with the pro-life
right.
spirituality?
Sure.
But first, let's go back to your journey. So then you left Amarillo, Texas, and you still, in your heart, was burning to be a priest. So tell us about the journey that happened next.
Yeah, sure. So, yes, right. So unfortunately, my journey with the missionaries came to an end about 2008. Through various permissions, I was allowed to continue at the seminary. And while I was in the seminary, I still felt a call to the priesthood, even if it was not going to be strictly in pro-life work. And so I began to explore joining other religious orders, for example, the Society of Our Lady of the Most Holy Trinity. I think I looked into the Benedictines. And then I rediscovered the Josephites, which were a religious community I had visited several times, but I had never formally applied to them. And, you know, when you get close to 50, you know, religious orders get a little nervous, you know, because they're afraid they might not get a lot of productivity, quote unquote, out of you. That's my term, not their term. But nonetheless, the Josephites were open to taking me. And so I initiated the application process with them. I should point out, I had visited them several times, so they were aware of me. They knew who I was. And so it wasn't like I was just someone giving them a cold call. And I think that helped me to get accepted into them. I did visit them after that extra year in the seminary, and thankfully they accepted me in the fall of 2009, and then I joined them in January of 2010.
Wow. And so how many years then did it take to ordination?
Well, so from 2010 to 2014. So, you know, I think we kind of used the, you know, some of the latitude within canon law to kind of help me to take my promises maybe a little more quickly than traditionally. But at the same token, you know, because of my age, I think that was probably a wise decision. So I think I figured total, if I include the formation with the MEVs, it took me about roughly about 7 years before I was able to get ordained.
And what, when was that? What year? And then tell us.
Okay. May 31st, 2014, I was ordained at St. Luke's Church in Washington, D.C. by Bishop John Ricard, who is actually, he's the superior of our Josephite order right now.
And
he was the former bishop of Tallahassee, Pensacola, and he retired early for health issues, but he has regained his health. And so he ordained me in 2014. And then my first assignment was to go to New Orleans, Louisiana. And it's kind of funny. People say, you sound like you're from Louisiana, or you have some Louisiana accents. And I never would have guessed that, having lived in Pennsylvania, you know, for almost 50 years or, you know, close to that. But so I was in New Orleans for 5 years as a parochial vicar at Corpus Christi Epiphany Catholic Church, which was at the time was probably the largest African-American Catholic church, certainly in New Orleans, but may very well have been one of the biggest in the country. And it's kind of funny when folks, when they pass, they say, when they die, they say, I want to pass through Corpus Christi Church, you know, where they grew up. And so I did quite a few funerals when I was there, but it was a very good experience, very warm and friendly culture in New Orleans.
Yeah. And of course, now you're a Texan, right? Then you get moved over to Texas, right, Father?
Yeah. So as a member of religious order, we're able to serve wherever our religious diocese works. The mission of the Josephites actually came about shortly after the end of slavery in the United States. It's an interesting story. Briefly, the founder, Cardinal Herbert Vaughan, who was from England, established the Mill Hill Fathers as a missionary society to evangelize wherever the British Empire was. Well, ironically, one of his first missions at the request of the Holy Father was to come to the United States to take care of the spiritual needs of the freed Catholic slaves. And so they came here in 1871, and then ministered to many, many folks, mostly down here in the South, Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, and Louisiana. And then, of course, in 1893, he called them back to England. And a handful said, we want to continue the mission. And he said, okay. And so he founded the Society of St. Joseph of the Sacred Heart. And the short name is the Josephites. And that's who I am a member of. And we still have many missions here in Texas, primarily in Houston right now. And my parish is in Baytown. So I was asked to become the administrator here. And my predecessor was asked to become the rector of our seminary in Washington, D.C. So this happened about 2 years ago.
Wow, that's great. And of course, I know you spoke about the pro-life training you received from us as part of the Missionaries of the Gospel of Life, and I know that spirit has stayed with you. So tell us, because you did make promises, didn't you, as a Missionary of the Gospel of Life, right?
We didn't get to that point, unfortunately, in terms of.
Oh, okay.
But I think I may have done it as a lay associate, as a
right.
a lay that's MEV. Right. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
That, oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, because even I made the first promises as a lay associate, right?
Okay.
Right. And that's what I'd like to discuss now a little bit for people, because they might say to you, Janet, Father David, like, all right, you're talking about pro-life spirituality. You know, when you think about it, trying to bring it into abortion, as you know, Father, it's a spiritual battle, wouldn't you say? I mean, come on, it's the forces of good and evil. I mean, to destroy the life of a baby, right? I mean, this is good and evil at its best, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there was actually one incident, I think, that demonstrated that. You know, when I joined the Josephites in 2010, I began my novitiate shortly thereafter, and I was praying at an abortion clinic in Washington, D.C. It was a Planned Parenthood facility, and they had a number of folks there who were acting as escorts, you know, and for women coming into the facility. And several of us were praying outside one time, and one of the escorts said something underneath his breath, which was very insulting to me personally. And I won't tell you what it was, but it was I would consider it, you know, something degrading. And nonetheless, you know, I remembered the words of the Lord, you know, you will have to suffer for my name. And I'm not saying every time I went there, I had that experience, but certainly there is that battle between, you know, light in the sense of knowledge, willingness to conform conscience to what the knowledge is, and darkness, which is really essentially selfishness, you know, preferring my own vision of things rather than the vision of God, or just the vision of, you could say, common sense, you know, we call natural law.
Right, right. And then, you know, if people want to study more about the missionaries of the gospel of life, if they go to our Priest for Life website, there's a link right there, or just go to missionariesofthegospelofliteoflife.com, and all the information is there. But I just thought, Father, we could just talk a little bit about what's called the spiritual disciplines for personal growth, which is part of the spirituality. I'm just going to name them quickly, and then we'll discuss them. It's prayer, study, fellowship, apostolic witness, and of course, the spirituality of the missionaries is that it's biblical, prophetic, liturgical, ecumenical, Eucharistic, and Marian. But we'll start first, like, you know, Father, with prayer. Obviously, I mean, that's like our, what would you say, our nourishment, right, as Christians. But especially when you're doing your pro-life work, like you just said, outside of an abortion mill, those who are praying outside of an abortion mill, that's why they're praying, because they're there almost like at the foot of the cross. They're there where a mom is going to go and destroy the life of that baby. You're standing up for that baby saying, please, God, intervene, help this baby live. So don't you find that first principle of the missionaries of God's life is to increase our prayer life, right, Father?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Anytime, you know, we face those challenges, whether you want to call it this, you know, the forces of darkness, which I think is fine. You know, we need that nourishment. We need that strength. And prayer gives us that strength, you know, to our souls, to our spirits, you know, to really help us to be confident and to persevere in the face of, you know, insults, to persevere in the face of people who don't understand what we're doing, you know, people who refuse to, you know, acknowledge the truth of the humanity of the unborn child, to those men or women maybe who are being forced in there against their will by their boyfriends, maybe by their parents, grandparents. And so those who are praying, they need that fortification. And you're right, Janet, all Christians need to have that strength to receive the grace from God that comes from prayer. And that is what will sustain us in the spiritual life, but it sustains us in that apostolic witness. So yes, that's vital to anyone doing pro-life ministry, and even anyone just, you know, living the Christian life.
Right. And of course, as missionaries of the gospel of life, we are like almost like a founding document for us is Evangelium Vitae, the beautiful encyclical written in 1995 by St. John Paul II. And, you know, yes. Father David, I can remember I was already involved with Father Pabon and Priest for Life. When that encyclical came out, I just can remember feeling so overjoyed. Mm. We couldn't wait to get our hands on it and consume every word of it. Right. Because for us, we felt like the Holy Father is really acknowledging the pro-life movement and saying, yes, trying to bring an end to abortion is the most important work on the planet right now. And so we've made that the cornerstone, and that's why it's called the Missionaries of the Gospel of Life. It's taking root from that Evangelium Vitae. And I know you've studied that document extensively. We have a study guide on our website they can find. But tell us, what are your impressions of the Evangelium Vitae?
Yeah, you're right, Janet. When I was a member of the Missionaries of the Gospel of Life in the religious order, yes, we had to study that. In fact, I think that was one of Father Pavone's assignments for us, was to each of us, each seminarian took a portion of it and really summarized it, and then I think prepared some study questions. And yes, it was a fantastic document. You know, certainly something that everyone can study, and it would probably be ideal for group study among, you know, members of the MEVs. And, you know, the thing I've always admired about the late Holy Father is his you know, his intellect, his ability to clearly explain things, his ability to reference scripture. And so he heavily references scripture and the necessity of promoting the dignity of the human person. In fact, he said that the gospel of life is the gospel of Jesus Christ. In other words, the pro-life mission in all its dimensions is essentially the gospel. And that, of course, is, you know, promoting the dignity of the human person, but focusing first and foremost on the unborn child, which is the most innocent and vulnerable of any human person. And, you know, that's something you and I know our society really needs to recapture. And the Holy Father said, if we do not, protect the life of the unborn child, all of the other rights that are good that we need, you know, the right to work, the right to health care, etc., they become superfluous. If you don't have the right to life, then you cannot enjoy those other things. And so he stressed the importance of working, you know, politically, even socially, educationally, to help people understand who the unborn child is and to recapture that dignity that really that unborn children have prior to Roe v. Wade.
Yeah. And of course, Father, there's certain parts of the Gospel of Life, Evangelium Vitae, that, like, for example, I know with my work with the Women of Silent No More who regret their abortions, of my work with Rachel's Vineyard, yes, which, you know, is part of our ministry, right. Paragraph 99 okay. for these women is so important. And for yes. those who don't know paragraph yes. 99, yes. paragraph 99, the Holy Father said that, because women always ask that, what about my baby? What about my baby? Is my baby with Jesus? Where's my baby? And in paragraph 99, when the Holy Father clearly said, we entrust your child to the Lord, that entrustment, yes. I have seen, Father, in so many Rachel's Vineyard retreats that when we tell them about that paragraph right. and they hear those words, oh, so I entrust my baby to Jesus. It's right. reassuring to them that, okay, it's going to be okay. Right, Father? Right.
Exactly. And that's what the Holy Father was trying to convey. He was trying to convey to the women who are suffering from abortion. And we can even say to their husbands, their partners, boyfriends, that we entrust the unborn child to the loving, you know, care of God. So in our Christian faith, we think typically to be baptized, to enter into heaven, we have to be baptized. And so the Holy Father wanted to assure the women that even though their babies were not baptized, that indeed God can make a way for them, and that they are indeed in his presence. And we always say in our faith that, you know, God is not bound by the sacraments. In other words, God could make a way for an unborn child or for someone else perhaps to enter into heaven even without baptism. But again, that's what the Holy Father was alluding to, that we entrust them to the care of God, that indeed there is a good chance and maybe even extreme likelihood that indeed they are in the presence of God. And you're right, that is very consoling to women, to men who've been involved in abortion, to know that even though they've done this thing and they've received forgiveness, that their child you know, may very well and probably is enjoying, you know, that presence of being in the presence of God, which is what we are strive for here on earth, of course, by, you know, by living, being faithful to our Christian faith and values. We do that, you know, with the hope of seeing God, being with him at the end of our earthly lives.
Wow. And of course, you know, when I think about all the different questions or problems we have in the pro-life movement, if you look inside Evangelium Vitae, the Gospel of Life, it's there. Like even with politics, the Holy Father really addressed that abortion is the foundational issue that, like you said before, Father, all these other rights, the right to a good education, to housing, to good food and nourishment, to healthcare, education, all that stuff's important.
Right.
But you have to have life to enjoy those things. And yeah, that's why life is the most important. And he even took on voting, you know, that it's almost like a duty of ours to come out and vote pro-life in Evangelium Vitae, didn't he?
Yeah, the Holy Father, you know, he's a realist, and you know, he understands that, you know, the way that women and men have set up what we call how they rule themselves, you know, through democratic forms of government, other forms of government, that if there is something that's unjust in society, then it has to be, it's legitimately can be addressed by making new laws, by reforming old laws, by promoting new laws. And so he acknowledged the necessity of what had to be done. And along with that, of course, is voting for candidates who will support our values. Now, I heard from a friend yesterday, I was actually out golfing with him, and he was telling me about his father. And his father one time was upset when a priest said, you know, you really should hold the pro-life, the life of the unborn as a primary value in voting. But the Holy Father, John Paul, was trying to say it's important for us to engage, our political process in the sense that we have elected representatives. And so we have to vote for those who are going to support our values. I mean, it's common sense. If we think about, you know, certainly, why don't we use the example of Nazi Germany, if people would have voted for the candidates who were not of that particular party, and if they would have been stronger in that, you know, maybe that great evil would not have occurred. And so we have to, you know, we have in our democratic system, we elect our representatives. And so we have to elect those who support our values. And the right to life of the unborn child really is the preeminent value. All the other things are good, you know, taking care of migrants, taking care of the poor. But again, if you don't have that right to life, all of these other things, really, it almost becomes a lie to support those because we do not support the right to life of the unborn. And so, yes, it is important. And the Holy Father, you know, strongly supported the necessity of involvement in politics and voting for those who support the right to life of the unborn.
Right. Now, if people are watching this program and maybe they're a little curious about the Josephites and they said, maybe there's men watching right now who maybe are discerning a vocation to the priesthood and maybe they don't feel called to be a diocesan priest. And they said, oh, the Josephites, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah.
Where could they go, Father, to begin to explore what the Josephites are about? Is there a website or, you know, just to kind of take a peek?
Well, you know, www.josephites, so that's Joseph with an I-T-E-S .org, josephites.org. If you go there, and remember, you're going to look for the one that's in the United States, because I think there is actually another Josephite order or something, or they call themselves that, but they work, I think, in Europe. Well, in any case, so www.josephites.org, and our current vocation director is Father Stephen Sohe. And if you contact, go to the website, you know, you can send in information. Now, Josephites are a religious order. So for a man who wants to become a priest, there are two options. You can become a diocesan priest, which means you work within a specific geographic area, primarily as a parish priest, or you can join a religious order like the Franciscans, the Jesuits, the Dominicans, the Fathers of Mercy, the Marians of the Immaculate Conception, the Josephites, and religious orders focus on a particular charism. The charism means a particular gift that that religious order gives to the church. The Josephites' religious particular gift is the evangelization of the African-American community. And so we not only take care of the needs of African-American Catholics, but through our dialogue and our participation in community life, we are there to evangelize non-Catholic African-American persons with the gospel, to show them the mercy of Christ, to be with them in their struggles, to certainly promote their social welfare. And so that's what we do as Josephites. Our primary role is primarily as parish priests. And in that, within that context, we have many opportunities to promote and to help African-American women and men, help their families, promote their needs in society, and to continue to take care of their spiritual needs.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful. And I hope, Father, because of this program, maybe we'll get some men contacting the Josephites. So, and I want to thank you for joining me on the program today, Father. It was a pleasure to have you with me. And of course, brothers and sisters, I'm going to give you a little secret. Father David Begany is going to come to our Priest Life headquarters in just a few weeks, and we're going to tape some exciting new episodes of our series for EWTN called Defending Life. So there's a little secret. So thank you, Father, for joining me, and I am looking forward to working with you in just a few short weeks. So God bless.
God bless you too, Janet. Good. Look forward to joining you.
Okay. Well, brothers and sisters, thank you for joining us here on Just Ask Janet today. And just a reminder, if you're interested in the Missionaries of the Gospel of Life, just go to that website, missionariesofthegospelof life.com. And if you'd like to inquire a little bit more about the Josephites, that's josephites.org. Until next time, this is Janet Miranda, Executive Director of Priest for Life. God bless. I will be silent no more. I'm free from the life. Love opened my eyes. I will be silent no more. I'm free from the shame. I'm healed of the pain. I will be silent no more. I'm free from the light.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.